Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Wednesday, the 10th of August. I'm Jen Ayeko Kumert in Bonn, Germany.
With me, Wanjiko Mora, with all your social media comments.
Our top story today, tensions continue to grow in Kenya as preliminary results are released. There have been reports of some death.
Raila can manage to get about 7 million votes, yet we are stuck at 5. That is false. In Nyanza, we expect more than 3 million votes.
And we have been monitoring what you have been saying on social media. We'll be having your comments on this story.
And German's Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel visits Uganda. All that and a lot more coming up shortly. Stay tuned.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. North Korea has announced it is reviewing plans to strike areas near the Pacific territory of Guam. The news came as U.S. President Donald Trump took a more aggressive tone against Pyongyang, vowing a devastating response to any escalation of North Korea's nuclear program. Trump also accused North Korean leader Kim Jong-un of taking on a belligerent tone that the U.S. would not tolerate.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement.
Guam Governor Eddie Calvo, meanwhile, reassured the residents of the island that every precaution was being taken to ensure their safety.
I'm working with Homeland Security, the Rear Admiral, and the United States to ensure our safety. And I want to reassure the people of Guam that currently there is no threat to our island or the Marianas. An attack or threat on Guam is a threat or attack on the United States. And I also want to remind the national media that Guam is American soil, and we have 200,000 Americans in Guam and the Marianas. We are not just a military installation. And with that said, I want to ensure that we are prepared for any eventuality.
The rise in tensions between the United States and North Korea came after the Washington Post newspaper published a report quoting U.S. intelligence officials saying that Pyongyang may have successfully achieved a miniaturized nuclear warhead that would fit inside its missiles. Incumbent Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has taken a significant lead in Kenya's tense elections. Opposition leader Raila Odinga, meanwhile, dismissed the tally, claiming that the election had been hacked. Riots then broke out in the opposition stronghold of Kisumu in western Kenya, and there were reports of deaths. Many fear there could be further violence in store. Disputed election results in 2007 resulted in clashes across the East African nation, killing more than 1,000 Kenyans. Final results are expected later on Wednesday at the earliest, but election officials will have up to a week to declare the outcome. We will be reporting in detail on the Kenyan elections later on in the show. You're listening to DW News. Reports have emerged that 6 Red Cross volunteers were killed in an attack on a health center in the Central African Republic last week. Civilians and medical staff may also have been killed during the assault, the Red Cross said. Violence between armed groups in the Central African Republic has left roughly 300 people dead and 100,000 others displaced, with the UN warning yesterday that the country was showing early warning signs of genocide. French authorities have shot and detained a man suspected of slamming his car into a group of soldiers in the Paris suburb of Levallois-Perret earlier today. 6 soldiers were injured during the assault. The attacker had apparently targeted members of the Sentinel Security Force, which was created after the Islamist attacks of 2015. The incident comes just 4 days after a teenager with psychiatric problems tried to attack security forces guarding the Eiffel Tower. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
This is DW's Africa Link program. I'm Jane Ayeko Kemet.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
We start the program in Kenya, where vote tallying is going on. Nearly 90% of the votes have been counted, and the incumbent president, Uhuru Kenyatta, is leading with nearly 55%. Opposition leader Raila Odinga has so far acquired 44%. Andrew Wasike in Nairobi brings us up to date.
All hell broke loose after press conference by opposition leader Raila Odinga, saying that the IEBC commission servers had been hacked using Chris Msando, the electoral official who was slain 1 week into the election. And then the person who hacked them rigged the elections in favor of President Kenyatta. This is actually what he had to say.
They gained full entry into the IEBC systems, acquired powers to write their will and drop the people's voice. The hacking has definitely affected the results of the 2017 general elections. It's a tragedy of monumental proportions.
We've been hearing of some deaths in Kisumu and Nairobi. Can you shed more light on this one?
I was in Madar slums for the better part of the day. People were, thousands of people, I would say from how I counted, just approximately, thousands of people, they were uprooting signposts from the road, carrying them and engaging police in running battles. Remember, this is the place where in 2007, over 300 people died to post-election violence. The crowds engaged police in running battles. Police were shooting in the air. There was a little tear gas here and there. But then there was somebody who was actually shot in the head. And I was there and I witnessed people come around there claiming that now the police have started what they were doing in 2007. I got a chance to speak to some of them. Here are some of their voices.
We've been reflecting whatever was to happen in our August polls. So as for now, they can't cheat us that. Raila can manage to get about 7 million votes, yet we are stuck at 5. That is false. In Nyanza, we expect more than 3 million votes.
Uhuru should tell us where the rest of the votes came from. We do not want war.
That report was compiled by Andrew Wasike in one part of Nairobi. We now cross to Kisumu, where the opposition supporters clashed with security officers, leaving one person dead in there. John Mwaura brings us up to date.
The situation here is tense, with most people here worried about what is going to happen. The day began quietly, with most people milling around television sets in some town restaurants and a few shops that had opened for business, but quickly closed after the opposition's press conference. The riots erupted in Kisumu moments after the leader of the opposition coalition, NASA, Raila Odinga, addressed a press conference and gave a chronology of how the IT system had been hacked and used to manipulate results in favor of the Jubilee Party. Then get the police in running battle, throwing stones and other missiles at them and taking cover in stalls. They also lit bonfires on roads and chanted songs that they want the outgoing president to go, saying Uhuru must go, Uhuru must go.
As you just indicate, the opposition politicians have been rejecting the preliminary results as they came. And have they already indicated what steps they are going to take should the final result actually not be in their favor?
They're still waiting. It's like they're still waiting to see the direction that the leader of the opposition, Raila Odinga, will take.
Now, despite this engagement between the police and supporters of the opposition, both Raila and Uhuru have been calling people to keep peace, to remain calm and wait for the final results. Do we foresee this message of peace continuing to prevail even after the final results are released in Kisumu, where you are?
Kisumu is known actually to be a stronghold of the opposition, and it is believed that they've had their elections win stolen twice. So this time they're also waiting to see how the leader of the opposition, Raila Odinga, will direct them. Though there's a lot of tension, shops are closed, there's nobody in the streets, there are no people in the streets. Some even left the town early before the elections.
John Mara in Kisumu. That is the latest that we have from Kenya. Certainly we'll be bringing a lot more a little later. But first, some of the comments that you've been discussing on our Facebook.
And we start with one Lamine Fadera from Brufut in the Gambia. He says, let the elections be free, fair and transparent. And he also adds, Jen, that he's not in Kenya, but they recently, only a few months ago, had their own general election electing a president.
It's quite been an inspiring moment that people all over the world, I could say, have been sending messages of encouragement and calling for peace for Kenya.
Yes, indeed. We have someone who had a few questions for us, Jane. So why would the opposition reject results even before they finished counting? Would they do the same if they were ahead of the counting, in the counting? And what valid reasons did they put forward? This is a question that Derek in Berlin is asking us.
Interesting there. And I think he goes on to say, well, in Africa, it's always about violence, violence, violence. What a backward continent. Shame. But I don't want to say it's always violence. I think so far, so good. Let's not be so pessimistic.
Absolutely. And just to bring us back to the reports from Kenya, the IEBC, which is the Electoral Commission in the country, has 7 days up to when they can give the final results. So the tallying is still continuing. We're still getting these results coming in. And it is, like you say, Jane, a bit too early to establish that, you know, this is what has been said, that violence is the precedence. It's only been in two areas, that's in Western Kenya and in a small part in Nairobi.
Another quick message of encouragement here coming from Moses Mwanji from Nairobi says, tension? No, there is no tension. The country is calm and we're just waiting for the final results. Okay, from Kenya, we go to the neighboring country, Uganda, where German Foreign Minister Zygmunt Gabriel has been visiting refugee camps in the northwestern part of the country. Gabriel is on a two-day Africa visit, including South Sudan. While in Uganda, Gabriel visited Rhino Camp, which is home to some 50,000 South Sudanese refugees in Arua District. I've been speaking to Daniel Pels, who accompanied the minister, about the purpose of the visit.
The foreign minister said that he regards Uganda as a role model because it is a country, as he put it, that is struggling and that is poor, but at the same time is housing a large number of refugees from South Sudan, from Burundi and from Congo. And he said he wanted to get a first-hand impression of how the situation is in Uganda for the Ugandans and also for the South Sudanese refugees who are here. That's why he went to visit Rhino Camp in the north of Uganda and interacted with refugees and toured some projects today.
Now, Uganda is also known as a model, like you just put it, one country that is taking in so many refugees from Africa. Just how bad is the situation like since you've been in the camps?
Well, I talked to the Ugandan state minister who is in charge of refugees, and he said the situation is extremely difficult because the influx of refugees is so big, especially from South Sudan. The numbers have dwindled a bit, but still he said the conflict is far from being over, and so they're expecting more arrivals.
Like you just said, you've been able to speak to some refugees from South Sudan. What exactly do they feel like? How do they see their life in Uganda?
I talked to a 22-year-old lady from Yei. That's one of the places where fighting ravaged for a long time in South Sudan, who had fled to Rhino Camp with her one-year-old daughter. And she said she's very grateful that she is living in Uganda. She showed me a small field where she's actually farming cassava. She said she's very grateful for that, but at the same time, she is noticing that services such as education or health are not readily available because simply so many people are competing for it. And
now, from Uganda, Minister Gabriel is headed for South Sudan itself. From what you've been hearing him discuss with the Ugandan counterparts, what's going to happen now?
Well, he is going to meet President Salva Kiir in South Sudan tomorrow. That's the plan. And, of course, discuss issues relating to the peace process. He said that Germany obviously wants peace to return to South Sudan, but, of course, everybody knows that this is a very, very difficult thing. There is no sign that the rebels and the government are willing to lay down their arms and come together. And so it remains to be seen whether he can actually influence the position of the South Sudanese government on this issue.
DW's Daniel Pels in Uganda.
And comments still coming in about the Kenya story. Christopher Emmanuel Kabaza from Zambia says, "Greetings, Africa. No violence. It's bad for us and our children and even theirs."
Yes, and the message continues, we need peace. Godfrey Akopol from Ghana is also calling for peace.
Keep your comments coming in on the DW page, DW Africa, and we shall be sure to read some more of them later.
Yes. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
With me, Wenji Komwaura.
Still to come, Nigerian military accuses parents of donating their minor daughters to Boko Haram to be used as bombers.
We have a community that is supposed to assist the security agents, but I think the community now is becoming a suspect.
But we shall continue with Kenya, where tensions continue to grow after opposition rejected the preliminary results. Deaths have been reported in some parts, and there's been heavy deployment of security personnel in the major cities. Abubakar Jallo is in Nairobi's biggest slum, Kibera, and now brings us up to date with what's happening there.
At the moment in Kibera, the situation is not looking good. You actually see youth standing in a small pocket around. I'm actually in the middle of it, watching what they are doing. The situation doesn't look good, and military forces are actually patrolling the area in their trucks, observing these youths.
Have you been able to talk to some people, at least to gather some information, what the military people are planning to do in case of any eruption of violence? How much are they prepared?
They've been cautioned to calm down, but it doesn't look like they are adhering to this caution. They look ready to take to the streets to show that they are angry about the outcome of the result, because the opposition leader Raila Odinga has also described the outcome so far as being flawed.
Does this look like a call from the opposition, or is this something that the youth are taking upon themselves to show their rebellion?
So far, we haven't actually heard anything from the opposition talking directly to these youths to actually calm down. So you would say it's been an initiative, or it's been a move by these youths themselves to take to the streets to actually vent out their anger about the outcome of the polls.
I was talking to somebody in Kisumu, and he was saying earlier on shops opened, but they immediately closed. What does it look like in Kibera? Is there anything like business activity, or does the place seem to be deserted?
Kibera is obviously an opposition stronghold, and they basically saying that the elections results have been flawed. They've been manipulated by the incumbent government, since the opposition leader Odinga alleged that they were able to break in into the system, into the database, and manipulate the outcome. So these people believe that hook, line, and sinker. They follow that particular line, hook, line, and sinker.
Abubakar Jallo in Kibera, Nairobi.
Now, Jen, as I mentioned earlier, people have been commenting a lot on the Kenyan story. If you're just tuning in, Kenya had their general elections yesterday, and today they're still waiting for the results of that election. Isaac Ehoza Godwin, writing from Liberia, says, I think it's not much of a surprise that the incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta is leading the race. I hope in this victory, the campaign promises will actually become reality.
Interesting comments coming in from there. Another one coming in from John Ongole in Uganda. He says, club president he's actually the club president of our DW listeners in Kumi, Uganda. He says, I personally think that Kenya elections are heads and shoulders above poll realities and maturity of any other East African country, or even in the Great Lakes region. Interesting.
Very interesting comments coming in there. And John in Kenya says, well, I would not call this election highly contested. I would call it highly contested, not divisive. Of course, we have also seen lots of Kenyans taking to social media to correct people that are generalizing situations within the country. Thank you, John, for that comment. And keep your comments coming in.
I can feel a spirit of African unity.
On the spot.
Now, the Nigerian army has accused parents of northeastern part of the country of donating their daughters as suicide bombers to Boko Haram. The military says this has led to a sudden rise in terrorist attacks in Maiduguri. But some parents have denied the accusations, saying it is mostly members of the terror group who are giving out their children to Boko Haram. Muhammad Alamin reports.
Suicide bombings carried out by teenage girls has this year been on the rise in Borno region. Revelations that parents are willing to give out their daughters to be strapped with improvised explosive devices has come as a shock to many. Army spokesman Sani Usman is now appealing to religious, traditional and community leaders to discourage their followers and other people from donating their daughters to Boko Haram. Most parents in the region have reacted angrily to the news. Many believe that only heartless or indoctrinated parents can do this. Sanyaru is a father of four residing in Gonji area of Maiduguri.
The reality is that no any sensible God-fearing father can give out his kids, more especially a girl, to be used as a weapon to kill innocent citizens unless he is a member of a terror group. It is very unfortunate, and we condemn such act in totality. We are law-abiding citizens. We are going to report anyone that gives out his or her daughter for suicide mission.
The military says minors are donated to the terrorist sect to perpetuate Boko Haram's act against the government and the people in the region. Security expert Sheikh Umar says this has complicated the war against terror in the region.
If parents can take their wards or their children to serve as suicide bombers to cause mayhem in the name of wider ideology, I think the implication here is we have a community that is supposed to assist the security agents, but I think the community now is becoming a suspect and is now being seen to be part of the problem than the solution.
So what is expected from the society and the security forces in regards to this? I pose this question to Abdullahi Inua, a Nigerian political analyst.
It is a constitutional prohibition that each and every member of the society is duty-bound to give necessary information to the authority and to cooperate with the authority. So I therefore urge the society to cooperate with the military. And also the military, this militaristic attitude which they always, you know, pose like lion or like something very worrying and disturbing. They should start abandoning it so much so that people will be confident and free with them, and information will be given to them. At the end of the day, this war will be end.
A report by Muhammad Alamin in Maiduguri. Very unfortunate that parents can actually do that if it's really true.
And a user who I think forgot to leave his or her name says, it would be so fruitless for someone to donate his or her own daughter as a suicide bomber.
In fact, having had listened to that story, it's so painful that one of the people commenting was actually saying that not any sane parent could do such a thing unless they belong to this group.
Oof. We have another comment coming in here from Olusoji Odeyemi in Nigeria, who says parents donating young female children for suicide bombing terrorist act? Amazing. Nothing is so warped up as this. I strongly argue that it is wrong to claim the fundamental ideology of the terrorist group has nothing to do with Islam.
And Obaichene Peter, also from Nigeria, seems to disagree that parents are giving out their daughters, because his opinion is that the girls used by the insurgents to carry out suicide attacks in Nigeria are those Chibok girls who are still held in captivity by the insurgents. The Nigerian military, I suppose, should lay more emphasis on curbing the Boko Haram sect from their heinous activities and attack on the innocent civilians.
Keep your comments coming in.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, after devastating floods that destroyed property and lives in northern Ghana, the country's disaster management organization has declared the region an emergency zone. It has also decided to temporarily relocate to northern Ghana in order to better monitor the situation. Maxwell Sook reports.
The floods have left dozens in the region displaced. Many locals like Ziblim Adam have been counting losses. Adam, a resident of Gumani in Tamale, lost his livestock, including his 50 bears and goats, which were washed away by the floods.
Got destroyed. Sounds electrical appliances or soaked. So it was very, very severe. The bears were carried away. The few that climbed the trees, they were there left, there were seven, but we had too many fowls.
Although Ziblim is 6 feet in height, he says,
you can see my height, I'm about 6 feet tall. Anything that was higher, up to maybe 4 feet, was covered in the room. Our mattresses, our food items, everything got destroyed.
At Gumbehene, one of the hard-hit areas in Tamale, people are still displaced days after the floods. I found Yakubu Idrisu struggling to save his remaining belongings.
It has destroyed a lot of things here. It sent people's things away. It's very terrible.
Harun Al-Hassan resides in Gumani and had similar damages.
As I'm telling you now, life are lost, properties are destroyed, houses, name them. At the moment, we are so serious here, and so we want to seek for the help from the central government so that they will look at it again.
The National Disaster Management Organization Director, Eric Nana Ajiman Prempeh, explains why it was necessary to declare the northern part an emergency zone.
If you look at what is happening, if the Bagre Dam is also going to be spilled and the water is going to add to what we are having, it is not a small thing. Therefore, we are declaring the three northern regions as a very emergency disaster zone now, with a coding name of Thunderbolt 2017. This is a special operations we are going to do here.
Hundreds of farmlands have been washed off by the floods so far, with many communities being cut off. I talked to Alhaji Abdallah Hindu, an official of the Disaster Management Organization in the northern region.
We have casualties, and then even we have encountered so many deaths, dead bodies. And then Salga, for instance, a lot of people have been affected, and some were even admitted, and some has been discharged this morning, and others are still taking their medical distance support. So we have a lot of casualties.
For Ziblim and other people affected by the floods, declaration of the region as an emergency zone is not enough.
It means we are still behind development. You know, it means so many things are going wrong. For instance, this stream has been here for so many years. Government after government, this thing has been happening.
The meteorological department has warned that more rains are expected in the coming days. The spillage of the Bagri Dam from Burkina Faso further worsens the issue. But the disaster management body says this time it is more prepared and has created centers where emergency issues can be reported.
Maxwell Souk in Ghana.
Jane, our top story today, that's the results of the Kenyan election, is still provoking lots of conversation on our Facebook
everywhere,
page.
In every media house, Wanjiku.
Absolutely. And it feels almost like the AU conference on our Facebook post. One of them, a comment here coming in from Johnson Soa. He says, I'm in Tanzania. For what I tell my Kenyans, please don't be used by politicians into violence. Stay calm. I love you so much. This is Johnson in Tanzania writing to fellow Kenyans.
And I do tend to agree with Johnson. Wanjiku, you know that in every society, there are elements of people who cannot probably handle their anger, and they are so quick to react. But I'm so convinced that the spirit of peace is going to prevail. There have been so many messages coming around calling for people for calm and peace, and I do believe that this is going to be the case.
Absolutely. And people on Twitter as well, someone calling himself Ramsey says, guys, I think we are in a habit of a rush to know everything. We just voted yesterday. We need to manage our patience. Like we mentioned earlier, Jen, the IEBC, that is the Electoral Commission in Kenya, has up to 7 days before they can formally announce who has won the elections. But of course, we know that the incumbent president, Uhuru Kenyatta, has a good lead ahead of his main opposition, Raila Odinga.
After all, the most consoling is that both candidates did say they would concede defeat.
Absolutely. Now, we definitely hope that their followers will listen to them and actually concede together with them.
Yeah, but you know, the people are driven by the followers. And at least for me, the most promising thing, the most encouraging point of view is that none of the leaders has called on their supporters to go to the streets. So we can still look positive.
Yes.
But on a more positive note, Wanjiku, you know that there's been an establishment of the Robert Gabriel Mugabe University by Minister of Higher Education in Zimbabwe.
Now, this has caused lots of people to make incredibly hilarious comments, such as Kandoro, who says some of the courses that could be offered, Ministry of Finance and Fictional Currencies at the Mugabe University.
That should be something very good, but we don't want to talk about that one now. That's all we had time for today from me, Jenna Yeka Kemet.
And me, Wanjiku Mwaura.
Thank you for listening to Africa Link, and we'll be here tomorrow.